Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia.
Too many things we found. That's the divine Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and the great David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for one, Solartopia. I am the one who wrote that one, Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. We're back with you, another Green Power and Wellness Show here on PRN, thanks to Gary Noll and to the great Jesse here in the control booth. And we got a great show for you, first half hour or so. We're going to be talking to Jerry Ashton, a true American hero who has retired billions of dollars in medical debt. We're going to let him tell you all about it. In the second half, we're going to talk with Jevin from Dayton, who has got a amazing rap song and an amazing story to tell about the death of his cousin in the Dayton shooting, and much, much more. As we proceed through the impeachment hearings, one of the things that doesn't get discussed as much as it should is the crisis in healthcare, the need for Medicare for all, and the amazing work being done by Jerry Ashton and his co-conspirators to retire hundreds of millions of dollars in medical debt. One of the truly great success stories of our time. Jerry Ashton, you're with us?
I very much am. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry, for being with us. Tell us about what you're doing. I couldn't begin to paraphrase. You've been on our show before. It's been a while, but you're actually on the brink of still more fantastic success. So tell us all about what you're doing.
Well, that's right. When I was last on your show, it was to talk about the book that we brought out called End Medical Debt, and the fact that within the chapters of End Medical Debt, which was written by the three people who started RIP Medical Debt, which is the charity, we asserted that indeed, since our inception as a charity in 2014, that before 2020, we would abolish $1 billion of the medical debt, thanks to the donations of people who make that possible. And I want you to know that we have achieved that goal and then some just this month.
Amazing. $1 billion. So tell us how it works. And be sure to give us the website and the name of the website of your campaign and the name of your book.
Well, thank you. Well, let's get the website out of the way. It's ripmedicaldebt.org. The book is End Medical Debt, coincidentally, endmedicaldebt.com. And people are wondering, if they haven't heard about this before, what in the world is medical debt? Why does it have to end up being forgiven by a charity? And, of course, you and I will talk about the reasons that create the need for the work that we do. And that is, if we had universal health care, there wouldn't be any medical debt for me to have to abolish. So let's go back to the groundwork, the spadework. First thing that can go wrong with anybody in the United States is to get sick or injured. Because if then you find yourself in a hospital, you are now in a very excruciatingly and labor-intensive and time-intensive and cost-intensive system of pain. And not only the pain of whatever it is that you're suffering from, but the economic pain that's a byproduct of that. And do you get what I'm saying so far, Harvey?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a devastating situation we're in this country, and we're going to talk in a minute with you about universal health care. But first, let's make it clear exactly what you're doing and exactly how you are retiring all this medical debt.
Okay, so here's the process. When you're in that hospital and you're discharged, the hospital sends you a bill in case you have what is called self-pay. Self-pay is any amount of money that's due after your insurance company, if you have one, has paid its share after, and if you're uninsured, of course, you get the entire bill. But that bill comes to you month one, two, three, four, and if you happen to fit into the category of too many of us Americans, where you are one of three things, either you're two times the poverty level or below, or you're insolvent, or you're in hardship, well, guess what? You're not responding properly to the hospital's request for payment, and you end up being sent out to a collection agency on a contingent basis. Contingency means that if you owe $10,000 and a collection agency manages to get that out of you, they get a contingency rate of 25% or so. They would get $2,500, and the hospital would get the $10,000, and, of course, you would be out your $10,000. If the collection agency is not successful because when there are enough bills on the kitchen table as it is, and you do have to feed kids and put tires on the car, then the agency, and sometimes as many as two or three agencies can be assigned to your account and fail, which means that those accounts are returned to the hospital, which is in a quandary. Would you like to know what that quandary is?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do I do next? So far they have 100% of nothing. But they do have one thing possible rather than writing it all off as a bad dream, and that is there's an industry called debt buyers. And debt buyers, you've heard of them. They'll get mortgages and put them together, collateralize them, sell them off. The same thing is done with medical debt and credit card debt and other forms of debt. These gross amounts of debt are bundled together and then sold off to a debt buyer who then either proceeds to collect on them or sells them to collection agencies, or I should say either sells them or assigns them as a contingency as well. But the process of collections really is accelerated because now the debt buyer, now that they purchase your account, which, by the way, they purchase between 3 and 4 or 5 cents on the dollar, when they're pursuing you, they're pursuing it for the full $10,000, not the 5% that they paid.
Uh-huh. And so okay. Then they come to you, who ran up the medical bills, and they try to collect from the person who was sick. And then, that's so where do you right. Where do you jump in?
Well, what happens in this business, which is financed by Wall Street, they go to Wall Street, they borrow the money to go to a hospital, and about one-third of all hospitals will sell their medical debt. Two-thirds do not. So of the one-third who do sell their medical debt, the debt buyer will approach them with an offer, and that is, right now you have $100 million, which is worth nothing, or what we could do is you could have $3 or $4 million in your hospital's bank account, because that's what we're willing to pay you for a debt of this quality. And so the hospital is put in the position of either seeing the entire portfolio of $100 million lost, or at least bringing in some money, because hospitals, as well as anybody else, they need to pay their bills. They need to pay their employees. So when that debt is sold, ownership of that debt goes to the debt buyer. And from that point on, the debt buyer can do anything within some legal restrictions to do what they can to collect that money. And as I said, they're going to go for it 100 pennies on the dollar, not for two or three times what they did pay for it.
And so the people who donate to you, to your organization, how does this work?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm sure you've heard the name John Oliver.
on TV last week.
Yes,
tonight.
Well, John Oliver was interested in sending up the collections industry and sending up the debt buying industry, and set about to do a program on that. And HBO enabled him to buy $15 million worth of unpaid and out of statute medical debt in Texas for a pittance for, I think it was about $60,000. And when John Oliver had that in his possession, the next thing that he had to do was find a way to, without violating HIPAA or privacy, to be able to abolish that debt. And we just happened to be the people that were referred to him, because as a 501c3, were he to donate that debt to us, which he did, we then, once we own the debt, we can forgive it with no tax consequences to the recipient. Are you following this?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So John Oliver donated not money, he donated the entire debt portfolio, $15 million. Then he did HBO did donate more money to enable us to send out the letters, to clean up the credit reports and things like that. So your listener are in a very powerful position, because when we buy debt, it's for a penny on the dollar. And there's a penny on the dollar because even the debt buyer realizes that they can't collect that debt. So we buy it for a penny on the dollar, and we forgive it. And, of course, we forgive it at 100 cents on the dollar. So if we buy a $1,000 account for $10, that entire amount of $1,000 is written off and is taken off your credit report if it was on there. So a donor can give us a dollar. That's worth $100. If someone wanted to abolish $1 million of medical debt, and a lot of people are doing campaigns that do exactly that, any idea of what you think that would cost them as a donation?
No, tell me.
$10,000 to $15,000.
Huh.
That's the kind of mathematics that we deal with. So that's why we look so good. We're really not quite the heroes that I'd like to imagine us to be. We're just guys who are doing the best that we know how, and what we do know how to do is to engage people who care about other people, who want to take medical debt off their backs, to donate to us. We go out and buy huge portfolios of that debt using the donor's dollars, and then sending out letters. And when the letter arrives in somebody's mailbox, it's a big yellow envelope. When people open it up, it will tell them that this debt has been abolished, and it's because of the generosity of XYZ person or XYZ donor, or even a hospital or a local synagogue, what have you.
Well, just to gauge the impact that you've had, how many people have you relieved of medical debt?
A half a million. Oh, 500,000.
Really? 500,000 yep. People who had medical debt, you yep. intervened with donor dollars and paid off that medical debt. Is that in the nutshell?
That's it.
And then you send them a letter, like from Publishers Weekly or whatever.
Clearing House.
And
exactly.
The letter tells...
It's called Debtor's Clearing House.
Publishers Clearing House, whatever they are. And Ed McMahon shows up and blah, blah, blah. But
yep.
So you have sent half a million letters to people who had medical debt and told them completely out of the blue that their medical debt has been paid off.
Yep. It's a wonderful feeling to do that.
And how much money has been involved? How much is the gross? What's the gross number of medical debt dollars that you've paid off?
Well, let me see. If we paid off $1 billion, you would have to backtrack that and realize it would take about, does it take 100 million, hundreds of millions to be able to do $1 billion? I'm not quite sure, but that's the mathematics.
Well, a billion is 1,000 million.
1,000 million, exactly. So that's what we were able to pull together. It was enough money to be able to keep our doors open, do the rigorous work that we have to do, work with four major universities who are doing an economic impact study of what it means to take medical debt off of someone's back. Now, I'm talking about UCLA. I'm talking about UC Berkeley. I'm talking about MIT.
and I'm talking about the University of Chicago. And we work with them with data to supply them so they can do random controlled trials so that we are going to have evidence-based truth, evidence-based fact that medical debt is injurious to the health of not only the individual, but to society at large.
Unbelievable. So now you are about to go on the Oprah Winfrey Show, is that right?
Yes, we've been. Actually, there's a magazine called O, and we were contacted by the editors of O Magazine, thanks to our excellent book promoter, I want you to know, Eileen Proctor, who we love and has been so helpful in getting the word out about us. So Eileen has reached out to O. O found that to be an interesting idea, because I believe the magazine at least once a year does a major section on healthcare heroes. So I guess we must fit somewhat into that category. And so we were interviewed just a few days ago, myself and Craig Antico, who's my partner who helped start this. Both of us, by the way, come from a collection agency background.
And how do people send in money to you? It's tax deductible, I assume. If someone donates to you, it's tax deductible. Okay.
Right. If you go to, there are two ways of doing it. One, you could go to the internet, to ripmedicaldebt.org. A lot of places that click on donate, you can do that. And in some cases, there will be campaigns going on in your local community. And if you can locate those, all you have to do is Google medical debt and your hometown and find out whether or not anybody's doing that, because you might want to join in with, say, the local church, the local business, people, local philanthropists. These people love to have company to do what they're doing.
Okay, good. And tell us again how to get a hold of you.
You can get a hold of us by going to ripmedicaldebt.org, and you can read up about how we do it on endmedicaldebt.com.
And it's all one word, ripmedicaldebt.org.
That is correct.
Okay, great. So let's segue now into a little bit of a policy discussion before we bring in Jevon. What is the, we have a national debate going on about Medicare for All. And now, how does your work fit in to the general discussion of Medicare for All?
Well, let me put out the caveat first that I'm speaking now as a fellow citizen and not as an officer in RIP Medical Debt, because a charity really is in no position to try to put its thumb on the scale in a political conversation. So we don't lobby, and all our function is education. And to that point, we actually delivered a copy of our book to every single member of the Senate, every single member of the House just this last summer to help them get educated so they could make an intelligent decision. And hopefully they will. But if you're talking to me as an individual and how I fall on this spectrum, I'm certainly in favor of universal health care. I want to see our charity put out of business.
In other words, that there shouldn't be any medical debt that has to be paid off.
Nothing that puts people into hardship. Nothing that puts people... Do you know that 60% of all bankruptcies in the U.S. are related to medical debt? You realize that 15 million Americans this year will have exhausted their life savings because they got sick or because they got hurt. When you take a look at the high deductibles and you take a look at how delaying and denying on the part of insurers make it extremely possible that no matter how well you think you're insured, if you really land in a sad position, you're going to be broke as anybody else. There's no protection.
It's unbelievable
that we have right now.
Yeah. It's truly unbelievable. And, of course, Medicare, which covers people over 65, works beautifully. Don't you agree, Jerry?
Yes. Well, here's
you're an expert in the field.
Well, I'm an expert in chasing after money, and I, as a bill collector, I never had to chase money down from people 65 or older because they didn't have that kind of bill. You know, they were covered by Medicare, so that's why I'm a great fan of that. Believe it or not, people who do have a hard time running up medical bills are veterans. I'm a veteran myself. I was a Navy journalist for 4 years and proudly served. And when I got out of the service, I just went into the workforce like most of us do. I didn't pay any attention to whether or not I was covered by health care or not. And then I reached the age of 65, and I discovered that I'm actually, even before then, I'm covered by the VA because of that service. However, it doesn't cover everything, and it's very strict in what people can apply for. Right now, there's over $6 billion worth of what is called emergent care owed by veterans here in the United States, $6 billion. And this is for occasions where the veteran had to take an ambulance to a hospital, or if a veteran had to go to a hospital instead of the VA, that went to a public hospital and was not covered by the VA, those bills ended up on the veteran's back as well. So you can understand I'm a little bit militant about this. I don't think anybody should go bankrupt just because they got sick or because they got injured.
Boy, it's a really powerful situation here. I mean, people work all their lives, and if they're shy of 65 and don't have Medicare, yep, you can go broke overnight, basically, right?
Right, and one of the pleasures that I have peripherally in RIP medical debt is the fact that we are educating people. We are getting, just like with Oprah, we're also going to be in PBS NewsHour. I believe it's on the 19th of this month. We are scheduled to have a number of newspaper interviews and what have you, because we reached this $1 billion mark. And every time people hear about this, and every time they understand that an organization has to exist because of the present broken healthcare system, it gets people a little bit riled up. We're educating people as to the fact that there's a problem, and they're being educated in a very wonderful and fine fashion with no hidden agenda, no twists, no quid pro quo. We're just here to help people. And that, in a sense, I look at it as being modern-day barn raising. You know, when a neighbor's barn caught fire and burned down, everybody would chip in whatever they could to bring that barn back up. Well, that's my idea of what should happen in healthcare as well.
Well, it's truly amazing what you're doing. And, I mean, to have liberated 500,000 people from medical debt is just, you know, that's just fantastic. And the money that you've raised. Tell people again how to contribute.
Well, again, a dollar is worth $100. We've actually gotten donations over the internet for a dollar, or people sometimes will mail to us. Our address is on the website. So your donation basically is worth 100 times what you put in. So if you put in $10,000, you're going to take care of $1 million. If it's $1,000, you're going to take care of $100,000 of people's misery. Now, I want to caution people that are listening that RAP medical debt does not buy an individual's medical debt. We have no ability to buy debt in anything other than bulk and nothing other than hospital debt from debt buyers at this time. However, we are paving the way to be able to go directly to hospitals to enable them to take the same advantage of either donating that debt to us or selling it to us for the same price that a debt buyer would take it. So individuals, we love you. We just can't take care of you in an individual fashion.
Not when Trump is in the White House at this point in time. That's going to have to change.
One other thing is that when we abolish that debt, it's not like we abolish every single dime owed by that individual, because it could be only the hospital debt, and they still have debt run up in other arenas. So it's only the debt that we have access to that we eliminate. But that in itself is one more burden that's off the back of somebody. It's one more bill that's not on the kitchen table. It's one less phone call from a bill collector.
We're talking with Jerry Ashton of RIP Medical Debt, their organization, which is unlike any other organization I've ever encountered. They buy up medical debt at a fraction of its face value. retire it, and have so far liberated 500,000 people, over $1 billion worth of medical debt. It's truly an astounding situation. So we do have, I guess, three major candidates pushing pretty hard for universal health care, Medicare for all. And that would be Bernie Sanders, of course, the great Bernie Sanders, who's done probably more to progressivize American politics than anyone else in the 21st century. Elizabeth Warren, who I just heard last night, who I had pretty good on the issue, and she's really gotten a lot more entertaining, Elizabeth Warren. She's become quite a show person. And then Tom Steyer, the billionaire, who is also, I think, an advocate of universal health care. Is there anybody else in the herd of Democratic politicians that we can mention?
Well, remember, I'm speaking personally from my own political inclinations and my experience in debt collections and with this industry, which is causing so much pain. I would not trust any politician's plan that doesn't create universal access. And to try to jimmy together some odd form of insurance plus this, plus that, they're going to have to do a lot of convincing to make me want to take an insurance policy again. Remember, we don't choose our insurance. That's a joke. Our company chooses our insurance. So these narrow networks where the insurance company decides exactly which doctor is going to fit into that or not, those things are insane. They're just insane. So what you're going to do is you're going to look at the politician, and you're going to watch what they do, not what they say. You're going to see who's donating to them. Who are the lobbyists that are putting money in their pocket? And why are the lobbyists putting money into somebody's pocket? All you have to do, friends and neighbors, follow the money.
Yeah, follow the money, exactly. And these big insurance companies that make so much money on our backs, it's just really pathetic. And I'm glad that you're doing something to alleviate the situation. I think that Medicare is one of the best systems ever established. You know, the right wing hates it because, A, it cuts into corporate profits, and, B, it shows that the government, the public, the community through the government can actually really change people's lives for the better. It's a very, very big deal, and that's what you, Jerry Ashton, have been doing. So I just hope that at some point we put you out of business. And that
don't happen. The sooner the better.
That would be a great thing. And I'll tell you, my mother's mantra, my mother lived to be 76, and she was healthy most of her life, but the last 2 years, she and my dad were had a lot of medical problems. They probably ran up $1 million in medical bills, but they had Medicare. And my mother woke up every morning and said, thank God for Medicare, because Medicare kept her alive. If it hadn't been Medicare...
I'm always amused by news reports of people who are living in the red states or people who are inclined to be anti-socialism, who also in the same breath will say, don't you dare touch my Medicare.
Right. Yeah, and also don't mess with the police force or the fire department, or the people who fix the roads. People who hate socialism are the first ones to complain about potholes and pot, for that matter. So, you know, this is an issue that we're really going to have to push, folks. We really got to get Medicare for all. In the meantime, Jerry Ashton's RIPmedicaldebt.org. Go there, make a contribution if you like, and you will be lifting the burden of medical debt off of your neighbor and your friend, and maybe even yourself. You know, I mean, it's truly an astonishing phenomenon. Jerry, it's really been a pleasure having you on. I've had you on before. You're a great guest. And when is your Oprah appearance?
Well, we believe that the magazine is going to be published in the spring of 2020. And we're also, speaking of which, the wonderful year 2020, think of the symbolism. What if we had 2020 vision of what healthcare was really all about? that it wasn't profit-oriented, it was people-oriented. That's what I would call a lack of myopia or astigmatism.
There you go. Or the positive side, it's farsightedness, which God knows we need more of in this country.
More of that.
The ability to see the future and to see the common good as it has to be served. Well, it's a privilege and an honor to talk to you, Jerry Ashton. And keep in touch with us, and we hope to see you on Oprah. Maybe she'll donate a bunch of automobiles that you can cash in and use to pay off people's medical debt. And thank you, Eileen Proctor, for getting you on the show again. I'm always glad to have you on, and we'll continue to follow your progress. What in 2020? What is your estimate? How much money do you think you'll raise, and how much medical debt do you think you'll retire?
Well, here's the joyful thing. The first billion is always the toughest. So we feel that.
Yeah, I found that in my case, too.
You know the same problem, right? I've had that in my own life.
Right, right.
We feel the next most obvious thing to do, if we've reached this billion-dollar mark, we can always get another billion. That's a good idea. But I think 1 million served. I'd like to take care of another 500,000 people in 2020.
Well, that would be great. That would be great, and I hope they all vote for candidates that support Medicare for all. We got to get somehow out of this mess and somehow out of this servitude to the medical industry. Which, of course, we also want to talk about holistic healing. A lot of which appears on this network, and I think that's important as well. But in the interim, let's keep at this. Jerry Ashton, you get the final word here.
Well, my final word is only vote for those people who are voting up for you, not for the people who are lobbying them.
All right. With that, we're going to sign off. Jevin, have you called in yet? Jevin, are you on the line with us? We've not yet heard from Jevin. Jerry Ashton, thank you so much, man.
My privilege. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, keep in touch. All right, we're waiting for Jevin to call in. We hope that he'll call us in soon. He has a devastating story to tell, and a real hip-hop video, or audio for us to listen to. If you want to call him, Jesse, I think we have his number. I will give it to you now. That would be the 323 number that called earlier that Jevin should be calling in. And when he does, we'll play his hip-hop video audio. In the meantime, I want to talk to you about what's happening in Ohio. Jevin is calling us from California, but his story is based in Ohio, in Denmark. I'm sorry, in Dayton, where that horrible shooting occurred. And his cousin was actually killed in this. The number to call Jesse is 323-270-6670. That's Greg Palast's number. And Jevin should be there and should be calling us in. So I also have 323-380-7721. If we can get Jevin on the phone, they may have misunderstood in terms of the time zone, because they're in California and they're supposed to be calling us in. But while we're waiting on that call, I have a 323 number. 323-333. What do we got here? I'm going to email these folks, and we'll see why they haven't called in. But I want to talk about what's happening in Ohio with the nuclear power referendum. There we go. I texted the wrong number. So I want to talk now about what's happening with the nuclear power situation in Ohio. The nuclear power industry went into the gerrymandered, bought, and totally corrupt state legislature and got themselves a bailout. And the bailout is for $1 billion to keep the failed commercial nuclear power plants operating at Perry and Davis-Besse on the lake. These are the two mistakes by the lake. They are losing money. They are extremely dangerous. And they should be shut immediately. The owner of these two reactors, which is the First Energy Corporation of Akron, has decided that they want to get as much money as possible out of the ratepayers, and they're sticking it to us. And I'll proceed with this now. Jevin, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, good. So I feared we had lost you, but here we are. I'm going to continue with the bailout and just to finish the thought, and then we're going to talk to you and play your audio. So in Ohio, the First Energy Nuclear Corporation got a bailout from the state legislature, and we, the public, submitted petitions for referendum to recall, or in this case, repeal the bill passed by Ohio legislature, and they have played around. The bill is now the referendum. The wording was approved, but we had to gather about a quarter million signatures, and the nuclear industry has sent in thugs to violently threaten people who are gathering signatures. We are now in court trying to get this ballot measure to be voted on in the fall of 2020, and I will keep you posted on that. There's an ongoing story we're covering on this show. But we will let you know what's going on right now. It's in court, and we don't know what's going to happen. God help us if those nuclear plants are bailed out. They will they are just really, really bad. They will have major accidents, and it is not something to be taken lightly. So tune in next week and all successive weeks to this show, and I'll keep you informed. Okay. Jevin, you are in California right now, but you are from Dayton, and you have an amazing story to tell, and we've got 22 minutes to do it. So tell us, please, Jevin, your full name and what you're about and what has happened with you, and then we'll play your rap audio, which is a little over a minute, okay?
Okay. My name is Jevin Lamar. I'm from Dayton, Ohio. I was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio. I recently moved out of Dayton 3 years ago, and I made a film about voter suppression with Greg Palast. So that was the reason of me moving, and it ended up going really well. So I moved out of Dayton, and now I am in L.A., and I'm making music. My passion, my life. Music is my life.
Well, tell us... Yes, and tell us what happened with your cousin that inspired your latest piece of music.
Well, the latest piece of music is called Still Holding On, and it's a song. I start the opening verse about my cousin who was killed August 4th of this year, and August 4th is also my birthday. I had turned 25 on my birthday. I was in Switzerland with my mentors. I was their ring bearer when I heard the news. I just went on a Twitter rant, tweeting Trump, all type of stuff, like, what are you going to do about this, and how do you feel about this, and I ended up getting blocked off of Twitter for 2 to 3 days, and also, at the press conference, when the mass shooting happened in Dayton, Ohio, Donald Trump was asked about it, and he said, I feel so sorry, I send my condolences to the city of Toledo, which means he really didn't care, you know, and I'm like, man, this guy's crazy. He's like, he blatantly, everyone was tweeting. We were trending on Twitter, Dayton, Ohio, Dayton Strong, Dayton this. Like, nothing about Toledo, El Paso, and Dayton, Ohio. El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio was trending. He said, I feel sorry for the city of Toledo. That right there, that kind of, like, spiked me up a little bit more. So when I came up with the song Still Holding On, it was coming from a negative place because I was more so mentioning police brutality and bad crimes that they do against black people and all this stuff. So, you know, I'm like, okay, this is kind of a little too much. Let me try to flip it up and just tell the story a great way. So that's when I came
all right,
up.
So tell us about your cousin and how he died.
Well, my cousin was killed August 4th, like I just said, in a massive shooting in Dayton, Ohio. It was over, I guess, they said it wasn't racially motivated, but the guy who shot my cousin killed his sister and the sister's black boyfriend. But a lot of other races got killed, so they weren't trying to say it was racially motivated.
And the shooter was white, is that right?
The shooter was white. And they said it wasn't racially motivated, but and the thing about it is, like, now since I'm going to talk about it a little more about this, they really didn't highlight the victims. Like, they're highlighting, like, I'm talking about my cousin now, and I wrote a song about my cousin, but they were more so worried about the shooter saying, oh, he was bullied, he had mental health issues. Well, pretty much, I've been bullied my whole life, my cousin been bullied his whole life because we're black. You know, so that doesn't make us go out and kill somebody or give us a right or even try to justify the fact that, oh, he has mental health problems, that's why he did this. Like, I feel like that was crazy. But, yeah, my cousin, he was killed August 4th, and he left four kids behind.
Well, he had a family. Yeah, go ahead. Tell us about his family.
Yeah, he left four kids behind. He had a job. He had a girlfriend. You know what I'm saying? He had a life. His sisters relied on him. His sisters loved him. My family loved him. You know what I'm saying? And I feel so sorry for his sisters because they just lost a mother. They just lost their mother, and now they're losing their brother. So I just want to just, like, I just can't not stop talking about my cousin, you know? It's pretty.
What was, like, his name? What was your
I'm
cousin's
sorry?
Name? What was your cousin's name?
TJ. TJ Thomas McNicholas.
And how old was he?
He was 25. He just turned 26 this year in September.
God, that's awful. All right, let's play. Jesse in the studio, can we play Jevon's rap song here? We had it sent in.
Second mass shooting in less than 24 hours.
Investigating.
It happened in the shooting in the city.
My cousin TJ was killed on my B-day. He was 25. I just turned 25. Never thought in my mind he would be the one to die in a massive shooting in the town of mine. He got four kids knee high that cut deep, huh? He can't work in the morning. He can't feed them. He got a wife at home, she can't see him. He got sisters, bro, they really need him. On top of that, his kids wanna see him. Bones to pick, this world is sick. Mental health and entitlement, devil supremacist, it led to this. Together we stand, divided we fall. We should throw hands before we bear arms. For all the victims, I'm crushed by your loss. Even though you're gone, we still holding on.
No matter where you go, I'ma keep holding on. Standing in the rain, we gon' get through the storm. Yes, the tide close, it might hit the coast. I'll be by your side, we still holding on. Yeah, yeah, we still holding on. In your brown eyes, I can see hope. Man, the world cold, it's hard to cope. I got your back and we still holding on.
Take my hand, who gon' take my hand? And when I take a stand, they gon' kill me where I stand. I walk through the land, step through the fields of sand. Following the footsteps, lead me to the promised land. Heal the world, words is not enough. I'm fighting for the ones not standing up, that can't speak up. It's hard enough that they indulge in killing us.
No matter where you go, I'ma keep holding on. Standing in the rain, we gon' get through the storm. Yes, the tide close, it might hit the coast. I'll be by your side, we still holding on. Yeah, yeah, we still holding on. In your brown eyes, I can see hope. Man, the world cold, it's hard to cope. I got your back and we still holding on. Yeah, yeah, we still holding on. Standing in the rain, we gon' get through the storm. Yes, the tide close, it might hit the coast. I'll be by your side, we still holding on. Yeah, yeah, we still holding on. In your brown eyes, I can see hope. Man, the world cold, it's hard to cope. I got your back, we still holding on.
Wow, that's very, very powerful, Jevin. Tell us, now you've been touring with that song, right? Tell us what you've been doing.
Yes, I have. That song is called Still Holding On, Jevin Lamar, on all streaming services, Spotify, Tidal, Apple, YouTube. The video's out, and it's on my debut EP, Street Orphan. I just came back from Dayton, Ohio, and I did a couple shows out there, a couple interviews. I also raised money for the team homeless shelter that I used to stay in called Daybreak. So the proceeds on my website, JevinLamar.com, if you want to donate to Daybreak for the adolescent teens and stuff going on, you can donate personally through my website. And I just had a big show there in Dayton, Ohio, December 2nd, and it's going to premiere next year on CBS. It was pretty nice. I got to talk to all the kids in the homeless shelter and tell them how I got out of the patterns and how I broke chains in my family and how I grew as a person and how I took the experience that I got from being in a homeless shelter. I took that experience and flipped my environment and changed my life from that and set goals for myself. So I had a couple other friends join me, my friend Stacy and my friend Michael. And we were talking about our experience at Daybreak, just uplifting the kids in the shelter. And it was pretty nice. I felt really good doing that because I feel like I actually had purpose. I feel like I'm living my purpose now because all these kids were abused. They were beaten. They were raped. You know, they're just forgotten about. And I was that kid before, you know. So it feels really good to help these kids out and help them grow.
Amazing, amazing. So how many cities have you been to with this?
Well, we did Ohio. We were on every news station in Ohio. We were in Cleveland, we're on Dayton, and we're in Cincinnati. We did ABC. So now we're just going to keep the movement going. I'm about to probably throw a little show out here for myself. To keep pushing the music because all the songs are great songs and it's all about where I come from. My EP, Street Orphan, is so Dayton, Ohio. Even though the song about my cousin still holding on, that's more upliftful. It goes into being uplifting, but I also talk about the hardships and the struggles that I faced and my family have faced on my EP. It's 6 tracks. It's about 14 minutes long. It's not too long. You really don't have to skip any track on there.
So how do people find it? Where do you get it? I assume it's online somewhere.
It's everywhere. It's on Spotify. It's on Tidal. It's on Apple, Amazon.
And what's the link? Give us the link, or how do we get the link?
The link is Jevin Lamar Street Orphan. All my hashtags and all my ads on social media is Jevin Lamar. You can get the EP anywhere. You can go on Google and type in my name, and you can get the EP like that. You can go on SongLeak and get the EP. It's just available in all streaming service stores.
Okay, and spell it for us.
S-T-R-E-E-T-O-R-P-H-A-N, Street Orphan.
And your name?
Jevin. J-E-V-I-N-L-A-M-A-R. Jevin Lamar.
Okay, so Jevin, tell us your story, your own personal story. You have an amazing background. Tell us about your upbringing and what brought you to where you are now.
Well, my upbringing wasn't the best. I grew up, we were pretty much like, it wasn't no starving. Like, we ate. We grew up on government assistance, but as far as like the love and affection, I didn't get that from either one of my parents. It's 17. I have 17 brothers and sisters in total. It's 7 on my mom's side and 10 on my dad's side. So it was pretty hard for my mom to raise all those kids. And my mom is young, you know. But one thing, you know what, I'm going to shout out my mom because she taught me how to hustle. She taught me how to get money, you know, taught me how to take care of myself without relying on people. And she just showed me that by example. My father's an addict of alcoholism. So he was very aggressive. He felt like he felt like his boys shouldn't get treated with like hugs and I love you. He felt like we should just get treated like men and learn how to be a man, supposed to be mean and assertive. So I got a lot of like beatings from him, like punches, and he used to always say I wasn't his son. I just grew up in very bad, abusive territory. My environment was solely messed up. My dad had 7 kids by the time he was 21. So I be trying to be a little bit, you know, understanding because, you know, I'm 25 and I have no kids. I couldn't picture having 7 kids right now, you know. So I be trying to be a little more understanding, but they're all these traumatic things that happened to me, they just kept happening, and I always would, like, write letters to God, like, dear God, like, why is this my family, or why am I going through this? And that's when I found out about the secret, and I started meditating and writing out my own story. What I wanted to happen in my life, I would write it on paper. And
amazing.
What
turned you around? What finally got you on a track that would lead you to a situation where you're working for the great Greg Palast and you're putting out songs and doing all the amazing stuff that you're doing? Where was the turning point?
The turning point, okay. After I got introduced to the book, The Secret and the Laws of Attraction, and speaking what you want into your life, I start writing. And I'm just like, dear Jesus, I would like to move to L.A., have great music. I want a Grammy. I want to inspire kids. I want to help the kids grow. I want to help the kids change. So 2 weeks after I start writing, just writing stuff, like using my imagination of things that I want to happen in my life, on Thanksgiving, I want to say Thanksgiving 2016, I met Greg, and I was a third shift server at a burger joint. And it just happened from there. It was just like so organic. I feel like I knew him my whole life. And he offered me an opportunity I couldn't resist. He just basically was like, I'm making a film about voter suppression, and I need someone on the ground in Dayton. You got to work for free, but you get a free flight to L.A. Oh. That's all you had to tell me. I slept in my car. I was homeless for 2 weeks. I was, like, knocking on everybody's door because I want to change for myself, because I want to be the one that break. I want to break all the chains in my family. Every single person in my family has been abused, neglected, disrespected, and they're oppressed. And they don't even understand or know how to get out of it. So I want to be that person who makes generational wealth for my family. I want to be the person who breaks all these negative chains for my family, especially my siblings, because that's who I'm super close with, my siblings. I just want to break chains for them, and I'm really, my message in my life, my whole life is like devoted to just trying to be a better person and breaking these environment chains and these stigmas that was beating into me, like certain things was beating into me, and I'm still dealing with these things, but I'm gonna get through them because I'm finding myself spiritually, and I really love music. I feel like if I didn't have the music outlet, I wouldn't even be alive right now.
So how do people get your music again? Jevin, we're almost out of time. How do people get your music?
Jevin Lamar, JEVINLAMAR on all streaming services. We're over 200,000 streams right now with all my music accumulated on all social medias. So it's moving at a nice little pace. So I would really appreciate it if y'all go check it out, download it, make a donation at JevinLamar.com. You can get the album off my website, and you can donate to the teen homeless shelter that I grew up in.
Well, good for you, Jevin. It's a great song, and we appreciate your help with voter suppression in Dayton, and certainly deeply moved and troubled by the death of your cousin, such a senseless. And this guy had four kids, and he was working to raise them, being a good father. And, unlike the creep in the White House, knew where he lived. And we hope to God that these mass shootings can finally stop. This is not what the Second Amendment is about, folks. The Second Amendment was about the security of a free state. And anybody who has a gun needs to be able to justify having that gun by showing us how having that gun contributes to the security of a free state. The Second Amendment does not guarantee everybody the right to own a gun. That is absolutely wrong. And we see, like with this horrible situation in Dayton, not Toledo, Trump, that although I'm sure it will happen in Toledo eventually, the guns that our society can't handle guns in everybody's hand. Certainly not automatic assault weapons, and that we can't let this continue to happen. Your song, Jevin, is beautiful. It's a very, very moving story. We are really glad to understand how you are pushing ahead with your life, and wish you all the best in doing that.
Thank
so you got a
much.
Last word. You got a last word for us?
Last word. I feel like I want to say everyone should practice conquering mental health, and everyone should vote. And maybe next time we can just put down the guns and hug someone, because if that guy could have went anywhere else, if someone could have hugged him, my cousin would have still been here. So we really have to stop.
All right, man.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that. And you are a national treasure. I want to thank Greg and Lenny for helping you out of that McDonald's. And you're going to be already a really powerful asset to the human society. And God knows we need more of them. Jesse in New York, thank you for going the extra mile here on this show. We really appreciate it. Thank you, PRN. Gary Knoll for getting us on the air, getting people like Jeffin on the air, along with Jerry Ashton. We will see you next week in Solartopia. Thanks for listening,
all right,
in, folks.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.